This recording is interviewer Kathleen Holt, and I'm here with Walter F. Habiger of Cimarron, Kansas. This is August 22nd, 19. Oh my gosh, I'm already into the history part. This is August 22nd, 2014. We are at the Cimarron City Library. And again, I'm talking with Walt F. Habiger about his experience in the Navy. Walt, why don't you kind of set the scene and tell us your terms of service, when you were in, where you were posted, what branch of the service. And then after that, when we kind of get the details, we'll go ahead and talk about some of the stories.
Okay. My name is Walter Habiger, and I entered the service. I left Hutchinson, Kansas on the 14th of December, 1950, and went to Kansas City on the rail. When we got to Kansas City, we did some more tests. After the tests, they put us on the rail, and we headed for San Diego, California. After 6 weeks of training, boot camp, they call it boot camp, they took some of us all out of there and put us on a little destroyer escort, which was in mothballs, and we put it into service. It took us probably 2.5 months to put it into service. And then after we got it in service, we took it out and tested it, made sure everything was working right. And then after that, we headed for overseas. And in 1951, I believe, is when we got over to Japan, which our base over there would have been in Sasebo or Yokosuka, Japan. I can't remember which one, but either one, we'd come back in for our port. And then when we'd get there, then we would take on provisions, and then we headed for the east and the west coast, either one of them, of Korea. And most of my time was spent in the Wonsan Harbor area, which we were looking for mines, looking for subs. We was shelling the shore, and anything that moved, we were supposed to, you know, try to stop or take out.
Could you spell Wonsan Harbor?
W-O-N-S-A-N, I believe. Okay. Wonsan Harbor. It's a harbor up there. And that's where we was doing most of our patrolling.
Okay.
And we was looking for mines and subs and even some junks. I don't know if you know what a junk is, but it's like those Korean people have little boats. Hmm. That they sort of live on. Well, a lot of them would be out there laying mines.
Oh.
So you had to, you know, intercept them or stop them and see what was going on, see if they was laying any mines. And we boarded. I never did personally board one, but the executive officer and the chief gunner's mate, they went aboard one, and I was right there when I looked down in it. Well, that's where they lived, right in that junk. They call them junks, but some of them had pretty high-powered motors in them. They could really move pretty fast. So, we never did find nothing on them. But the funny thing was, like whenever you was trying to stop one, they would run up different flags because they didn't know who was stopping them. They'd have a British flag, American flag, or whoever's flag. They'd run it up the pole. So that was about the size of it. We spent our time over there just messing around in that harbor and watching things and trying to find some subs or mines, and which we did explode a few mines. There was a few of them that we found. And we had a 50 caliber machine gun on the back of the ship that we use to explode them. If you see them out there floating. A lot of times they was just below the water, but most of the time they was set right on top of the water. so.
So tell me a little, first one thing I want to kind of back up. What was your, you were in the Navy, what was your rank or title?
Gunner's mate, second class.
Okay.
Second class gunner's mate.
So what basically was the job description for
Well, the job description was to, like, my duty station was a 5-inch gun mount. And that was my battle station, too. The thing you did was, like, after you used it, after you did some firing with it, you went and cleaned it out. You had a big, just like you take a, clean out your rifle with a barrel cleaner. Mm-hmm. Which was about a 6-inch. See, it was a 5-inch gun mount.
Okay.
So it was probably a 5-inch brush that you'd run through there, clean it out, and you would oil up all the mechanism that was in the gun mount, make sure that everything was working, so the next time you went on general quarters, that everything was ready to go.
How many of those would there have been on your ship?
Two. One in the front of the ship and one in the back of the ship. And then we had a quad 40-millimeter gun, and we had, I think, eight twin 20-millimeters. And we had two racks of depth charges, like on both sides of the ship. Mm-hmm. And we had, let's see, I think they call them some hedgehogs, which was right behind this forward 5-inch. That would, you'd shoot, there was a, like 20 of them in this rack. Mm-hmm. Well, they would shoot, you know, like one or two at a time.
Oh.
And what they would do would go out into the water, go down, if there's anything down there, and when they struck, they would explode.
Wow. Okay. So, okay, let's kind of walk back to, you said you put your ship into service. What was the name of your ship? You said it was in mothballs. Tell me what was involved in getting that ship ready to be put into service.
Okay, when they put them in mothballs, they go and put, I think you call it cosmoline or something, like you know, something to keep the salt water from eating on it.
Oh.
Like all the guns had this, probably a 1/2 inch or an inch of cosmoline all over them.
Oh.
So you had to clean all them, get all the things, take them all apart, and clean them all up. And then the ship itself, which, like the, we call them the deck hands, which that was the people, well, took care of the painting and everything on there. They had to do a lot of scraping and painting. You know, paint the ship and get it all cleaned up. Because, you know, after sitting out there, see what they did when they put them in mothballs, they tied them up out there four abreast, four of them little destroyers abreast, and just anchored them down in the bay. And they just sat out there since World War II.
Wow.
Which that wasn't that long, see, because of 45, 46, they probably put them in mothballs. Okay, in 50 and 51, they start taking them out.
Wow.
So they wasn't really in mothballs that long.
Right.
And that's what it was. It was actually, they just took everything off. All the guns and everything was still on there. But the engines had to be revamped and everything, get them working, mm-hmm. make sure, and everything on there had to be redid. So that's why the crew that went overseas was on the crew that got this thing. Plus, we had a lot of shore workers that come on, you know, guys that are working in the shipyard, they would come on the ship and help clean it all up and get it all ready.
Yeah.
So, it took a while. I mean, but you worked day and night. It was going day and night on them, 24 hours a day.
Wow.
There was never any, I mean, you heard racket. And you could still sleep, even though they had racket on that ship. After you got tired, you'd still go in there and sleep.
So where did you sleep?
That's another thing. When we went to one of my reunions, I kept telling the kids that we had these bunks that was like 3 high, and I said I slept on the top bunk, and they didn't believe it. And then another thing, like in your bathroom, your thing, mm-hmm. I said, well, in that bathroom, all we had in that bathroom, there wasn't no stools in there like you got now. It was just a trough.
Oh.
A trough on each side, and you had seats on M Trough? And they said, oh, you're lying. So my wife, she took a picture of it, which I don't have it with me, but we have a picture at home. And she took a picture of that bad, that commode, and showed that, and those kids, and they finally believed it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you just set, it was just about this far from each other, set across there, four on one side and three on the other side.
Oh, my gosh.
See? Goodness. And then the bunks, we slept in a bunk in a compartment down there. Like the gunners all slept in one place, and the deckhands in another place, and the cooks in another place, engineers in another place. But there was, the bunks was three high and two abreast in some places, like in the middle. Wow. But on the side by your wall, there'd only be three of them, three of them. And your lockers was underneath there. That's where you kept all your stuff. You had three lockers, three bunks.
Wow.
Your locker was down there and your bunk was there.
Was the inside of a bunk like a box or was it like a hammock?
It was a
box with the mattress or?
No, it was like a hammock.
Yeah.
It was just a steel rail on the outside with a canvas laced up, and you had a mattress that was about this thick. And you had two wool blankets. And, sometimes over there in Korea, it got pretty cold, but it used, but most of the time it didn't need no two blankets.
Yeah.
But, it was something. It was an experience.
Yeah, I guess so. And the name of your ship was what?
Naifeh, Naifeh, Destroyer Escort 352.
I bet you get a lot of questions about that.
Well, sure you do. Yeah, they say, we know you're in the Navy, but what's the name of your ship? It's because it sounds about the same.
So Naifeh.
Naifeh. And in fact, the guy that the ship was named after was from Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma.
Oh.
And in fact, there's some artifacts from this ship that is in the museum in Oklahoma City.
Oh.
Because, see, that family, he sacrificed his life during World War II for something, and that's why they named that ship after him.
So
that's why it's after Naifeh.
When you were in the service, did you ever run into anybody that you knew from back home?
Yeah, when I was when we was in boot camp, I was serving the child line, and there was a guy came through from Healy. His name was Sharp, which he's part of that Sharp's mm-hmm. seed company.
Mm-hmm.
He was from there. And he just had come in, and see, we was getting ready to ship out.
Oh.
And we was serving the chow, and they was just new ones coming in. So that's, and then I met, there was a few of them from Kansas that was in my company. But see, then they all kind of split up. When we got out of the boot camp, they put them on different ships and different places.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only one guy that went with me on my ship, and he was from Manhattan, Hedren, Carl Hedren. He stayed on that ship, and we both got on the ship at the same time, both got off the ship at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So.
Goodness. Tell me a little bit about I'm not really familiar with that time, but the draft, and what were you doing when you got drafted, and did you want to go? Were you planning on going, or about how you got into the service? And
because I was 20 years old, and see, they was drafting, and I was already eligible for the draft of the Army. Well, I didn't think I wanted to be in the Army, so I decided. In fact, I joined the Navy with making a career out of it. I thought, I just stay in there for 20 years and retire and then mm-hmm. still do something else. But then after we went overseas and the Korean conflict was over with, see, there really wasn't nothing going on. And then we was doing a lot of, I call it Mickey Mouse stuff, wasn't really doing anything. So I decided, that's not for me to be in here just kind of loafing around and just kind of doing stuff that wasn't really doing nothing. So that's why I decided to get out. But when I went in, I decided to stay in for 20 years and retire out of it, but I didn't. I served my not quite four years, 3 years, 10 months, and 22 days.
Wow.
Is what I was in there.
Wow. Did your folks, were they happy you went in?
Well, no, Mom wasn't. Well, Dad, see, Dad was in World War I. So he knew that, in fact, see, I had uncles in World War II, and then I had a brother that he was in the Korean deal. He came in 52. And see, he was in the Army. He was on the land while I was out there on the ship. And he told me it was kind of cold and everything. So that's why I really didn't. Well, and I knew some guys that was in the Navy, and they told me about it. And I thought, well, that'd be pretty nice to be in there. At least you have a bunk, unless you shot out from under you. You'd have a bunk every night out there in the Army. You don't know where you're going to be sleeping.
Yeah.
See? So that's why I joined.
Was your brother older or younger?
Younger. He was younger.
Okay.
He was young. He's 18 months younger than I was.
Wow. Okay, so you joined up in Hutch. You left from Hutch.
Yes.
Went to San Diego. Was that kind of the first time you'd been out of the state, or you'd traveled before?
No, that was the first time I ever was to Kansas City. I mean, when I went and left Hutch, I was at Hutchinson because we used to go down there to the fair.
Oh.
But anyway, I left on a train. My oldest brother took me down there to catch a train. It was early in the morning. So I left, but that's the first time I was in Kansas City, first time in my life. And then when I made it to California, I said, oh, my God, I mean, this here is a whole lot different. Yeah. I mean, it looked different, palm trees, it looked real nice, as long as I was there. But I wasn't there very long. I didn't stay there very long.
So you went from Kansas City by train to
By train
San Diego.
Out to San Diego, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was that like?
Well, it was a long trip. It seemed like that train was awful slow. I don't know if they put us on the slowest train they had or what. It wasn't that cheap, for sure.
Yeah.
So, but it took us, I don't know how many days it took us to get out there. But there were some guys on there. And then those porters that was on there, well, they're pretty slick. See, they thought, well, these old Kansas hicks are coming in there, don't know how to play poker and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Well, they wanted to place a little poker. Uh-huh. Well, see, I've been around a little bit. I knew a little bit about it. So anyway, we played a little bit. Oh, some guys lost some money, but I never lost any money, see. And that one porter, he got plumb mad. He got up and left. He thought that he should be winning and we should be losing. So, but it was an experience. That's the first time I was out of the state, really.
Wow. So San Diego must have been something. Oh, how about the ocean?
Oh, well, yeah. But see, then after I got out on the ocean, I lived out there for all them years. You had that water around you. In fact, one time we was out there in a storm. I mean, it was really bad. In fact, there was like five ships in our convoy that we was heading over there. And sometimes you couldn't see nothing but the top of that mast on another ship. That's how big of swells there were. I mean, up, going down, and that ship was a slap in the water. And anyway, the old captain, he come on the ship. He kind of would keep the morale up. He said, well, one thing about it, I mean, you couldn't see no land nowhere. One thing about it, well, you know, there's land a mile straight down. See, a mile straight down.
Won't grow wheat, but...
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I mean, I just think of us landlocked people then being out there on the ocean to be your life for 4 years.
Well, but you know what? Sometimes, like in the morning, you get up when the sun was just coming up, real calm. Oh, it was beautiful. But then, boy, when you got into a storm... That wasn't very nice. I mean, in fact, the ship, in the center of that ship, see, that ship was like 310 foot long and 30 foot wide. So that's not too big to be out there. And jumping around.
Yeah.
But in the center of that ship, they have expansion bands, like so the ship what it gives.
Oh.
Well, during that one storm, I was standing in a chow line, which going down in the mess hall. Well, those looks that old expansion deal was just like this here. You could see it moving.
Oh my!
Yeah, I mean, see, that's it's got to move, or the body it'll break in two.
Sure.
See.
Sure. Yeah. You were in the chow line in the storm. Did you get seasick?
Well, that's one thing I was lucky. I never did. Now I used to smoke cigarettes. Cigarettes never tasted good when we was out there sometimes in the storm, but I never did get seasick. But there was a lot of guys did,
huh.
And that's like you say that chow line. It wasn't very many in it because they couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And then another thing, when down in the mess hall, if you didn't latch everything down, well, everything would fly around, and the garbage cans and everything was just flying all over. So it wasn't a very good sight. But you still had to eat, so once in a while, you know, keep your energy up.
What was the food like, making that shift?
Well, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, a lot of guys wouldn't eat it. Like on, I think every Friday, they used to have cold cuts, which is lunch meat, cheese, and stuff like that. And a lot of them guys wouldn't eat that. Ah, we don't like that stuff. And then sometimes they'd have, like in the morning, you have scrambled eggs, and a lot of guys wouldn't eat that. They thought that was bad. I thought that wasn't too bad, you know. Or you'd have some fried potatoes and stuff like that. And then on some holidays, we'd have turkey, and we'd have steaks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
But when we got over there in Korea, off the coast of Korea, like when we never got back into shore for, say, 15 or 20 days, well, our provisions was running pretty low. So we didn't have anything fresh, or we didn't have no fresh milk. They had powdered milk, but I didn't really care for that. In fact, when I got back to Hawaii, first time when we stopped in Hawaii, the first thing I got me was a big plate of salad and a carton of milk, because we never had no fresh milk over there.
Yeah.
It was all powdered milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you, well, before we go to the ship, let me ask you this. Describe the ship. Like you said, the mess hall was down below. How many layers or stories were there, and what was each one?
Okay. Well, that ship was, there was only, clear down to the bottom was your fire, engine room. That's where the engines was, and all, everything down there that run the ship. And then the next deck would have been your chow, your mess hall, and your bunk beds, and your ammunition, where you kept your ammunition stuff.
Okay.
And then the next deck would have been the top deck. See, that we only had, that ship wasn't that, it didn't have four or five decks.
Okay.
Well, they only had two decks, engine compartment, and the other compartment was your living compartment, your mess hall, and then where you kept your ammunition and stuff. See, below these, like these 5-inch gun mounts, below those, there was a hydraulic, it was like a, I guess, what do you call them, lazy Susans that take food up and down?
Oh, yeah.
That's what, we had those where you put your shell in there and your powder case, would put them in there, and it would hydraulically bring them up to the gun mount. And then the guy would take them out of there and put them into the gun.
Oh.
See? So that's there was usually two guys down below in this this area below the gun. And up in the gun mount, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six of us up there.
Wow.
There was a gun captain, a pointer, and a trainer. The guy that loaded the shell and the powder case, it was a brass case about 2.5 foot long by 5 foot. He put that in. Then we had the hot shell man with asbestos gloves. When that hot shell would come out, he'd have to catch it and throw it outside.
Oh, see? Wow.
And if it didn't catch it, it'd fly around inside of there.
So, did anybody ever get hurt?
No, never got hurt. The only time, only time we had a mishap was we had a misfire, and the hot shell guy, when they ejected the shell and everything, he took that thing and somehow it slipped out of his hands, and it went down below into the where the other powder kegs were. So anyway, I hollered out and I told him, I said, throw it in the, see, there was a head over there. We call them a head, bathroom. The head was over there. See, and they had them troughs.
Yes.
I said, throw it in there. I said, that way if it was hot, it wouldn't cook off. So they throw it in there. That's the only time we ever had.
Wow.
And I don't know how it got down there. It should have went outside, but it somehow went down there below.
So when you say outside, did they throw it overboard or what?
No, see, there was a hole in the bottom of this gun mount.
Yeah.
You would just throw it out on the deck and then it just rolled off the side or whatever out there.
And what specifically was your job there?
Well, first when I started there, I was, now I couldn't tell you if I was a pointer or a trainer. Boots, Boudelier, we called him Boots. He was on one side and I was on the other side. See, most of the time this thing was automatic. They would take they would lock onto a target, and then the guy up on the bridge, he was directing that gun. But if we ever lost power, then I had to, either I was raising the barrel or moving it this way. And Boots was doing it the other way. And then we had the pointer and the trainer, and we had the shell guy that put the bullet in, that 5-inch bullet. And then we had the powder man that throwed that powder in. He put the powder in first, and the bullet guy would put the bullet in the next, in the front there. And the hot shell guy, he'd just wait there till it come out. And then the gun captain was up there. He had the headphone on, taking the instructions, when to get ready, and then he would say, tell us to stand by, load, and then fire. So there was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of us in that mount.
Yeah. It sounds like it was close quarters.
It was.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know how, in that pointer trainer deal, which we were smaller at the time, you could jump in there, but if something would ever happen, you never got out of there because you were sitting clear down in front here. But you could, the one thing about it, when he was there, you could look through the sights and you could see the target and stuff that they were shooting at the time. And, you know, so that was pretty cool that way.
Yeah.
You know? And then the gun captain, he had a hatch up there on top that he could get out. He could open it up and look. And he had a periscope that he could watch and see where we was hitting, what we was doing, so he could go right or left or whatever.
No computers in those days.
Oh, no. Computers or nothing.
Somebody
but the thing about it was, like when we went on general quarters, y'all went in there. And see, you wasn't ready to do any action yet. You just sat in there and waited. A lot of times we'd sat in there for 2 or 3 hours, just sitting in there, and some guys would be sitting there trying to take a nap and whatever. I mean, he was really cramped up.
Yeah.
If I had to do it today, I would never be able to get out of there.
They'd have to have a hoist.
Yeah.
Well, how many men were on the ship?
Well, at the time, there was 100, and most of the time, like 152, I believe, but sometimes we'd have a few extra on there. We'd go up to maybe close to 200.
Wow.
But that most of the time is like 100, from 130 to 150 guys on there.
Ever any women?
Oh, no. Yeah. There wasn't ever. The only time there was a woman, we stopped in, I think it was Hong Kong, China. And she came, I don't know why she came over there, but she came up there and see on a ship, when you crawl, go up on a ship, you got a ladder, a rope ladder that you crawl up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and when we tied up in San Diego, they had a all kind of a ramp that went out there. You could just walk out on that ramp. But when we tied up in a harbor somewhere, we didn't have no ramp. We had a rope ladder. Well, I noticed this Chinese lady. I don't know what she's coming over there for, but she came over there and she's come crawling up that rope ladder, was feed them Chinese. I don't know if they still are that way or they did, but they had a split skirt. Their skirts were split. Mm-hmm. And when she crawled up there, her legs was coming right out.
Wow.
And I don't know why she came up there. I have no idea why she came over there, came on that ship, and then she left.
Huh. That'd be interesting to know. Okay. Tell me about, you mentioned in Hong Kong and a couple of other places. Did you, when you went back to shore, so to speak, you were out about how many days, and then about, did you go back to the same harbor? Did you go to a different port? And what kinds of places did you go during your time?
Well, when we usually go out and stay for at least 20 or 25 days, and like when we was on patrol, and then we'd go back to either Sasebo, Japan, or Yokosuka, Japan, which them was, they was harbors for different ships, and we would tie up there, and we might stay there and get provisions and stuff like that, and then you could go ashore just during the day. You couldn't go, they had a curfew. You had to be back at the ship at a certain time because you couldn't go, but you'd go over there and you could look at them shops and stuff, and in fact, I bought my two sisters, three sisters. One sister-in-law and two sisters, I bought them a set of china when I was over there and shipped it back. Uh-huh. And it was nice china, I guess. So I don't know if they still got it or whatever happened to it. But you could go over there. We'd go over there and look around. And they had bars. You could go in there and stuff like that. But their beer, they had some kind of a beer that kind of tasted funny. Didn't really taste like beer. So, but other than that, you couldn't stay out there at night. You had to come back. You had to be back at your ship at a certain time.
Yeah. Did you ever miss your curfew?
No, I never did miss my curfew. But one time, what the heck, something happened. There was old Trelch, myself, and Boudelier. We got back to the ship a little late, and then we got restricted to the ship. In fact, when we went to Hong Kong, we couldn't go ashore on Hong Kong because we were restricted to the ship for being late 15 minutes, I think.
Oh, I see.
We didn't quite make it back by that time. And there was no tolerance there. If you was late, they didn't say, oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
They put you on report. You go ahead of the captain, and the old captain, he would just restrict you. The next time you got to port, you couldn't go ashore. You had to stay on the ship.
Did you ever get to go to Hong Kong then?
No, never did. We only was in there one time. We went in there to Hong Kong. I don't know why we was at Hong Kong. We stopped in that harbor, and I was restricted to the ship, so I couldn't go to Hong Kong. I seen all the thing, but the thing I remember about China, Hong Kong, is they had that smell that was like an incense or some kind of a different smell. Mm-hmm. To me, it was a bad smell. I thought it smelled, and I don't know what it was. It could have been, but a lot of things, it might have been, like over in Japan, they had open sewers. Like in the streets, everything was open. There wasn't nothing closed. Mm-hmm. So it might have been that sewage that you could smell. Mm-hmm. In fact, they take that sewage and take it up on the hills and fertilize their stuff with it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was a smell. And then they had a lot of open fish markets that you go around. You could smell that fish too. And I don't know how, and the flies was all over it. How did the people, they eat that stuff and never got sick with all them flies all over it? I just don't understand, didn't understand that.
Did you have warnings and things when you went ashore? Did they tell you about eating?
Yeah, they told us not to eat any vegetables or apples and stuff like that. But I seen one of them apples. They looked so good, and I went and got me one, and I never got sick. But I ate me one of them apples.
Hope you washed it.
I don't remember, but I didn't. you know, it was so long since I had an apple, and they looked so good.
Yeah.
But they said not to drink their water, not to eat their vegetables, and anything like that. Anything raw, you weren't supposed to eat it. But that apple looked so good, so I went and bought me one and ate it.
Did you mentioned Hawaii. Was that on your way back home?
Well, when we went over, we stopped at Hawaii for a little redoing on that ship. We had to do something on the ship. Oh. So we was there probably for a week. And then when we come on the back, we stopped there too in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I got to go in Hawaii on the Waikiki Beach. Went down. We went swimming mm-hmm. in the Waikiki Beach and stuff like that. And it's probably different now. I haven't been, that was, what, how many years ago? 60
yeah,
years?
Probably, yeah.
60
yeah.
years ago, yeah. See, since I was there.
Yes.
So it's probably changed a bunch.
I bet it has.
But at that time, yeah, the Waikiki Beach was there, and, well, there was a lot of people out there, and there's still a lot of tourists there. Mm-hmm. But we did see that Arizona.
Yes.
When we went out, yeah. You could see the Arizona. You could still see the old stacks down under mm-hmm. the water. They never had nothing on top of it then. Mm-hmm. It was just like it when it went down.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now they got it all fixed up.
Yeah.
So
go visit it.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever wanted to go back to any of these places?
Well, yeah. Well, I asked my wife if she would like to go to Hawaii, but then we thought, well, yeah, it'd be nice to go see it, but then we just always keep putting it off and keep putting it off.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't. You mean go over to Japan and stuff like that?
Any of those? Yeah.
Probably not. I wouldn't. I don't think so. Hawaii, I might go.
Yeah.
But it's so much tourist going on now and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. On the ship, you mentioned that your ship had two battle stars. Is mm-hmm. that what you say?
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about those times. That would imply conflict, right? Or combat? Was anybody injured? What was that? What was your combat experience like?
No, nobody was injured that I know of. The only, like I say, what that means is that you either was fired upon or you was, which we fired on the shore a lot. We fired on it. You know, all the time. Anytime you seen anything move, you were supposed to try to take it out. So, but the stars means that either somebody shot at us, and like I said, the only experience I had was that one time, heading to my battle station, I seen something hitting the water out there. So it had to be some bullets or something was hitting that water. But I didn't stick around long enough to find. I hurried up and got in my gun mount. Got in that 5-inch gun mount.
Okay.
So
you were down there. Okay. What about contact with home? Did you write letters? How did you communicate with home? Were you homesick?
I probably missed. I missed a lot of that. Like you say, growing up on that dirt and being out there on the dirt a lot, then being on iron and water all the time, that's a lot different. But I probably missed the ground and the state of Kansas, you know. So, and my family and everybody, you know. But I wrote letters home, not probably as many as I should have. But a lot of them was censored too. Like Mom would get a letter and it was censored because you wasn't supposed to tell them where you was at. And then a lot of times, like when we was over there in Korea, you would send a letter. Well, it might not get over here for a long time. Because, see, they'd have to go back to Japan, then from Japan go to the United States or to another ship or to a plane and come back here to the United States. So a lot of times them letters wouldn't get over here till I might be someplace else. You know,
oh, yes.
But I wrote a few of them, but I probably didn't write as many as I should.
Yeah.
I should have wrote more, but I didn't.
Yeah. What kinds of things did you ever get a package from home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mom would send us a Christmas package, and then funny thing was, you might get that package, like for Christmas, or probably already in the new year sometime. Mm-hmm. And then when you got it, she might have had some cookies in there. Well, then when you got ready to open it, whenever, well, a mail call, you know, everybody said mail call. Everybody goes up there. Habiger, well, here comes a package. Well, you know what, all these guys, here they come over here. And when you open it up, if there's cookies or stuff in there, yeah, they were, hey, hey. But the thing was, the cookies was all broke up, and, you know, from being knocked around.
Yeah.
But they're still good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cookie crumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you hadn't met your wife then?
No.
Okay, that was after you got back. What about other holidays, going to church? Did you do any of that?
Well, going to church, like when we was at camp, you could go to, it wasn't a non-denominational church where all religions could go, and you'd go like into an auditorium, and you could have a service. But as far as being out there on the ship, we never had no chaplain out there or nothing, so we didn't really go to any services. The only thing you could do is maybe say a prayer to yourself or something like that, but no services.
Kind of walk me through an average day on the ship, like from getting up and going to bed.
Okay, well, normally they got reveille, which the old guy gets on the bullhorn, and see they got mics all over that ship. And then there's one place where whoever's up there giving you information, then he blows his little old whistle in there, chow call, you know, probably at 6 o'clock. So then you go up to the bathroom, wash and get ready, and then you go make your bunk. That's the first thing. You get up, you don't let your bunk undid. You do that bunk. And you go up to the bathroom, get ready, and then you go down to chow, have your chow. Then when you get done with your chow, you go, if you have a duty station, which mine was a 5-inch gun mount, you go up there and see what needs to be done. If anything needs to be taken apart, worked on, you go ahead and do it. And then, about 10 o'clock, see, we had a gunnery locker where we kept all the small arm stuff in. Well, see, we had us a coffee pot in there. Mm-hmm. So we could go in there and make us some coffee, all the guys in the gunnery, about 10 o'clock, just like they do now, take a break, go down there and have a coffee and sit there and talk a little bit. But the thing about it was, nobody wanted to clean the bucket out where our cups was at.
Oh.
When you put your cups, you just put the cups in that bucket.
Uh-huh.
Well, the first thing you know, that bucket got looking like coffee. it wasn't clean water no more. See,
yeah.
The other guy to clean it out. And then after that, well, you'd go back to your duty station and do some more work. And then noontime, chow time, afternoon was the same thing. You go back to your duty station, you go do that. Or if they might have a drill, we might have a drill. Or like we was over there in the war zone, there might be general quarters. Then you go to general quarters and you just wait for orders to start doing whatever we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after that, after we was secured from general quarters, then you could go down there and eat your supper or your lunch, whatever you want to call it, at night. And then at night, sometimes after, if he wasn't doing anything, if he wasn't on watch or on... See, another thing, you took your turn taking watch. Everybody took his turn of doing a 4-hour watch. You either went on a lookout, or you went up to steering, or you went to sonar, or someplace. But every 4 hours, they changed the watch on that ship. And so there was somebody awake all the time. And then when you wasn't on duty, you could go take your nap if, you know, if it was a nighttime, something like that. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of times they had movies, too. You could go down and have a movie. And the only time you'd get a movie, if we would come in contact with another ship, then the captain, he would call over there and want to know if they had any different movies. So what they would do, they had a line that we could fire between each ship. Mm-hmm. And they would put these movies on this line and bring them over to our ship. We'd send some back to their ship.
Oh,
that's how we got new movies.
I see. Traded them around.
Yeah.
Wow.
You trade back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes we'd go, like when we was out there for like 20 days or 25, we would even refuel at sea. That means that we went alongside of a tanker, and they would send over a big hose, about a 6-inch hose, and we would fill our tanks with diesel to keep our ships from running.
Wow.
And then we just go side by side, just like they in the water, and take it on that fuel all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, we stayed out there. We got some of our chow that way, too. If we was out there long enough, run out of stuff, we'd get a hold of a tanker or something. Hey, you got this, got that? Yeah, so we'd go alongside, and they'd send it over.
Wow.
And we even send a... some guy had, he got sick or something. Even put him in a bosun, they call it, you've probably seen it, the Coast Guard got those big old cradles that they put these guys in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we had. We sent one guy from our ship over to him because he was sick. We couldn't take care of him, so they put him in another ship.
Wow.
Across that water, if he'd dropped him, he'd have been in the water.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah.
What was the... Was there a scariest time, a time you were really uneasy, time you felt threatened, dangerous, or just kind of...
Well, probably the most, most of the time that you went to general quarters, and when you was firing your guns, well, you know that something was going on, or somebody could be firing back, too, see? So, I mean, it was... I wouldn't say that it was bad enough to make you really get scared, but I mean, you was kind of concerned, stuff like that, because one of our ships that was in our convoy, he got hit with a mine, or something in the back, but anyway, it tore off the back of the ship, part of the back of the ship, see? So, you know, I mean, something like that, if that would happen in the middle of a ship, well, yeah, you might be going down. Mm-hmm. So you kind of think of that, but you don't really dwell on it.
Yeah.
Because what you're going to do about it? You're out there, you got to do the best you can.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like there were air strikes.
No.
Not there.
That's one thing. Koreans never had any air force to speak of.
Okay.
And nobody was helping. Now, we had a lot of planes was flying over. But we didn't have any airplanes to contend.
Oops. Yeah, I had the... Okay, we're good.
Are we good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. One of the things I forgot to ask you about was how about laundry? And what did you wear every day? You didn't wear a dress uniform.
We had jeans, regular jeans, not like these jeans now. They're just regular old cotton jeans. And a blue shirt. You had a blue shirt or you had a t-shirt. And then you had like a white hat. You could turn the hat like if the sun was shining. You could turn the hat inside out and put it over. And just regular shoes, just, you know, lace-up shoes, small shoes. And that's about it. Mm-hmm. When you went on Liberty, which when you went ashore, then you put on your dress blues. Mm-hmm. You know, you dressed up and looked halfway decent. Mm-hmm. But out there on the ship, you just wore blue jeans and a t-shirt or a blue shirt.
And who did the laundry?
Okay, we had one guy, Tony Bruno. Was a guy, he was from Massachusetts. He was a little Italian. He was a laundry man. And what you did, you took your, every day, or whatever, you took your laundry, you throwed it in a big basket. And then he would come and get that laundry and take it back. The laundry was in the back of the ship, clear in the back of the ship, in the second deck. And he would put it in a big old wash machine or whatever it was. And, I mean, it'd come out clean, but he would, then when he got done, he would put them in that same basket, bring them out there, and just dump them out on a locker or someplace. And then you had to go find your own clothes. And see, we had stencils that you stencil your own clothes.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, if you didn't get there early, some guys would take the good stuff and leave the ones that had holes in it. So you made sure you got there, got your clothes, because you might wind up with no clothes. Yeah, I mean, socks and stuff like that, or shorts.
Yeah.
And we had boxer shorts. You didn't have briefs. You had boxer shorts. So some of them guys, I mean, they'd pick out, they didn't look for their name. They'd pick out the best ones and left the ratty ones later.
Okay. Then what happened? How did your service end? When did you know you were coming home? And
okay, well, the last time we went overseas and we was heading back to the States, which was probably in after the armistice in 1953. So we was heading back to the States, and we got back to the States, and then we just, you know, did regular maintenance on the ship. We'd go out and have dry runs or doing stuff, just kind of keeping in shape because you didn't know what was going to happen. But then I knew that when October came, well, see, first I was supposed to get out in December. But then they went and took off 2 months, so I got out in October.
Oh.
They let you out early. If you was in so long, you got out 2 months early. So I was looking. So then the last 2 months of my duty, they took me off the ship and put me on the base. And what they did on the base, and every day you'd get up and you'd go have your breakfast and you'd have coffee and stuff like that. And then they would put you in a commissary where these people that lived on base, the women would come in there and they'd buy their supplies. They're like grocery store. And what we did was sack those groceries for these ladies. And that's what we did for the last 2 months that I was there. Clean up around the base and work at the commissary, sack groceries and carry them out to the car, do that till we got ready to get discharged. And then when the time came to get discharged, they went through a process that you go in, and what they do, they set you down and they try to talk you back in the re-upping. You know, in fact, the chief come to me and sat down and talked. He said, well, he said, your horizons is a lot wider now. You've seen a lot more country. And when you go back there in Kansas, it's not going to be the same. So you need to think about re-upping, which that was another 6 years. See, you re-sign up for another, which is going to give you a bonus to do it. And it sounded tempting, but I thought, well, I've had enough of this, so I think I'm not going. So then I decided to get out, and I came home, and I can't remember if I came home on a train or a plane or what, but I came home, and when I got home, then, you know, the regular life set in. Well, then I took some odd jobs here and there. I worked for the oil companies, and then in 1957, which I met my wife probably in 56, so then in 57 we got married. We got married and we moved to Hutchinson, and I worked for an oil company down there, and then she worked for some oil promoter, some offices right there in town. And we lived there for about a year, and then my dad, he got kind of sick and he was needing some help. So then I decided, well, I thought I'd come back and try my hand at farming. So then I come back out here to Cal Vista, and I stayed there, farmed for the rest of my life there, and now I live in Cimarron, so I guess that's where I'm going to be.
pretty good path.
Mm-hmm.
How did, when you look at it and over the scope of your whole life, what part did that Navy experience play in it? What lessons did you learn? How do you feel that changed your life?
Well, it probably made you grow up and realize that there's a lot of things in this, you know, you take a lot of things for granted. But then when you get there when you get there, you're not going to leave. You're going to have to stay there for them 4 years that you decided that you just can't say, well, I'm going to go there. Okay, tomorrow I'm going to leave. I'm going to go home. Well, you can't do that, see? So it kind of makes you stick. Whenever you start something, you stick with it. And then that's what I did. I stuck with it. And I've had some good experience. And I don't know if I'd want to do it over, which I couldn't do it over now. Sure. But it was a good experience at the time. I seen a lot of country. And I met a lot of different guys from different states. And stuff like that. So I guess you got to kind of give it credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep in touch with any of those guys?
We used to have a reunion that we went to. Every year they had a reunion in a different place in the United States, like it was East Coast or West Coast, and down in Oklahoma City or down south. And we kept in contact with them, but then after the years, there was a few of them would pass away. And then the ones that I was all kind of friends with, mm-hmm. more than the rest of them, mm-hmm. most of them has all passed away already.
Mm-hmm.
See, so now we don't have that reunion anymore, and most of them are all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So it kind of come to the end.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're capturing your story. Well, that was our question. Anything you'd like to say, summon up, and what you would like for your kids and grandkids to know about this?
Well, I don't really have anything. They can probably listen to it, and sometimes listen to it, and then see what they can come out of it, see what they can make out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a good experience and had a good life and a good family and a good wife, so you can't ask for anything more.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Again, this is Kathleen Holt with Walter F. Habiger. It's August
22nd,
2014, and we're at the Cimarron City Library. I guess I didn't say our interview started at 9, but there we go, 9 a.m. So thank you all.
Well, thank you.
Thank you much.